Are you that one friend in the friend group that loves to treat yourself? It's okay. You can be the one to refuse making coffee at home because there's a fancy coffee shop downstairs. Or opting for the extra legroom, I've done it, on the plane because your vacation is starting now, not later. Or buying extra when that certain something's on sale because it's saving money. Well, if you're treating yourself to the top options in everything in life, then why settle when finding a doctor? It is your health, after all. Enter ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book tens of thousands of top-tier doctors, all with verified patient reviews. So don't settle. Go for the best and find the right doctor for you with ZocDoc. With ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and a website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. All the docs have verified reviews from actual real patients. You can filter it for those that take your insurance, those that are located near you, or treat specific conditions you're looking for. I found it incredibly easy to use, and you will too. Go to ZocDoc.com/beyond and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/beyond. ZocDoc.com/beyond. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Beyond the To-Do List. I'm your host, Eric Fisher, and this is the show where I talk to the people behind the productivity. This week, I'm excited to share with you a conversation I had with Anne Bogle. Anne has been on the show many times, including the first few episodes of this podcast. And if you're paying attention, I re-released her last appearance, last episode. To set this one up, in this conversation, we're talking about her new book, My Reading Life, a book journal. It's a journal created for book lovers or soon-to-be book lovers that has quotes and lots of room where you're going to record what you've read and what you would like to read. It's a way to approach your reading life with intention. And in this conversation, we get into diagnosing what your reading taste is, setting reading goals and what those can be, some options there for you. And again, just the power of reading in your life, both fiction and nonfiction. So whether you are a reader or you're not, but know you want to be, this is a great conversation to springboard from when it comes to reading. So I'll get out of the way and let you listen to this episode with Anne Bogle. Well, this week, it is my privilege to welcome back to the show, Anne Bogle, and welcome back to Beyond the To-Do List.
Oh, it is a pleasure. You know, Eric, I was just thinking today, I've always loved your show. Do you know that yours was the first podcast I was ever on, ever?
Are you kidding me?
I'm not.
That's awesome.
I'm not. The first time, way back in, I don't even know the year, 2012, 13?
2012. Yep.
Really?
The year it started, you were in December. And so you were one of the first swath of guests from August to December that I did. And I think what's funny is I think we met at the, wasn't called Start, but it was John Acuff's Quitter. Was it Quitter?
It was in Nashville.
It was in Nashville. It was at the compound there back in the day, and he was doing a small conference, and you were there, and I met, I believe your husband was with you, right? We met all three of us.
He was there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we met, and that kind of started it. So that was the first one, and on that first episode, we talked about work-life blending instead of work-life balance. Do you remember that?
I do.
Yeah. So, and then the next time we were talking about all the differences and the benefits of all the different personality assessments. And that was a fun one.
Makes sense.
So
makes sense.
I'll link up to that. And then most people, if they're listeners that are current, know that I just released a retread. That sounds bad. Retread's not right. A re-release. There you go. Of when you came on and we talked about overthinking and we talked about, you know, decision making. And how not to overthink or how to cope with being an overthinker or become less of one.
And exactly.
That was last year.
That's all good stuff. That's all really important. But today we get to talk about my favorite thing.
Yes. See, because that's the thing is like this time we get to talk about like you're not just here to talk about a book, although you are, but it's more so to talk about your passion, which is reading. So I would love for you to paint a little bit of a picture here, context-wise. Wow, I didn't know this, but this was the first show that you were ever on But you're a seasoned podcaster these days and have been for years now, really. So,
well, that was almost 10 years ago.
Right.
I mean, a lot has changed for us in 10 years.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So,
as it should.
But before podcasting, you had a little site called such and such. I want you to go into that. Just let's build out some context here before we talk about specifically this new book.
Oh, sure. The context is I'm a big nerd. I mean, that's a word we use with great affection on my blog, which I started in 2011. It's called Modern Mrs. Darcy. You know what? I'm not going to tell you the original tagline because that is lost to history in those who remember.
Nice.
But it started as, I guess, a lifestyle blog. I wanted to blog about the timeless and the timely and how those things come together for women. Like, what has always been true? What is true right now? How do those things relate? And what does it mean for our lives? But when you're writing a blog, you get to write about whatever you want in your own basement. And I found myself more and more talking about books. And so on Modern Mrs. Darcy, it wasn't too long before I was, you know, launching Little Musings on Life. But the thing that was launching me onto that topic was a book I had read. And I started sharing book lists and started talking to readers about the love of reading. And so all of a sudden, this thing that I had always loved pretty privately became something that I now really do professionally. And that is, you know, read, talk about the books I'm reading and help others get more out of their reading lives.
Yeah. Well, and that kind of pivoted into then the podcast, What Should I Be Reading? Which then was one of my favorite guest appearances on any other show. That was, I think, like late 2016 now. So about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But it was still
fun. Your episode was so fun.
Yeah.
Well, what I love about our show, What Should I Read Next, is that when a reader comes on, I mean, half our readers, half our guests, maybe even three quarters, will never be on another podcast because that's the kind of show we run. We want to talk to all kinds of readers that you really feel like could be your friend, your teacher, your neighbor, your nephew, your dog walker, your, I don't know, your clerk at the bakery. Can you tell where I went this morning? Or that could be you. You know, we feature lots of people with a wide variety of reading tastes. And sometimes we have on book professionals or other podcasters like yourselves, but you don't ever go on a podcast and get to talk about that aspect of your life, except for on What Should I Read Next? And what we do when we talk about what you love to read is we're really learning so much about you as a person. And I just love the way that's what happens when we talk about books. We end up talking about people's stories and about the things that really matter in all of our lives, but books are what offer us the way in.
Mm-hmm. I had a recent episode with Jeff Brown of the Read to Lead podcast, and we dove into, you know, the power of reading and the why behind reading, and as well as, you know, diving into tips and tricks from the book, which is how to, one, develop a reading habit, which I know you're completely 100% on board with, and I'd love to get your take on that. But two, how reading can influence and boost your career. Now, that's not necessarily your angle, but you're coming at it from more of a holistic, reading is important to your life as a whole, not just your career. Although for you, you've made a career out of it. So, but what's your take on like developing a reading habit? Like, I know that a lot of people are reading nonfiction. You often are suggesting fiction works, which honestly is one of the things that I don't read enough of either. Closest to that I get to is probably autobiographies. I read about a year ago, actually, I read Eric Idle from Monty Python, his autobiography. Such a good book. Like I highly recommend
it
to everybody.
It.
Yeah. So what's your take? What's your, you know, in terms of building a reading habit, I'd love to like cover that a little bit because that's when then my reading life, the book journal comes in to start helping you with that, I think.
I'm just busy jotting down the name of that book because I think Will might love that for Christmas. So thank you for fitting that in.
Yep.
Yes. So in our, we have a podcast and a blog and a book club member site, but in everything we do, we're adamant that like reading is not broccoli. It's not like taking your vitamins. It's not like eating protein or cereal, but that it's something that can really bring joy and delight to your life. And is it enriching? And like, has it become my work? Yes. Like, did it help me in my work before I did that? Yes. Has it been wonderful for my relationships, like and personal development? Yes, yes, yes. All those things. But that is not the reason we talk about doing it. And in our audience, so many of our readers, our listeners, they're hanging out with us because they want to be reading. So often what we're not doing is like selling them on why you should, and I'm really reluctant to use that should word, but you know, why it could behoove you, but to really help you follow up on this thing that you would like to do. We talk to so many people who say like, well, there was a time in my life when I used to read, but I'm just so busy now and I fell out of the habit. we try to help people eliminate the obstacles so that they can be reading. Is that that you're going to ask me how next, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, you're already going there, so keep going.
I mean, in my job, I talk to readers, you know, like every single day, almost. I've talked to thousands over the years. And I think that people who find a lot of satisfaction in a steady, reliable, satisfying reading life, they have good books that they want to read. Like there is, when it occurs to them, what could I read? They don't have to answer that question before they read the book. They have a stack of stuff they're interested in reading, and that really propels them forward. And they're very conscious about making time to read those books, which, as you said, often looks like a habit. And I'm sure people are tired of hearing this by now, but if you have time to look at Instagram, you have time to read a book. And I'm not saying that many people aren't busy and that there aren't seasons where it is definitely easier to read than in others. But I mean, Eric, this is beyond the to-do list. Here we go. We make time for the things that matter to us. And what I hope to do is help convince people that it's worth making time to read a good book of any genre you'd like.
Well, it's kind of how, you know, I love listening to podcasts so much. I find the time to fit it in, even if I can only listen to part of one show as I'm driving to or from, you know, running an errand or something. It's the same thing. I mean, you know, I'm not necessarily saying, hey, pop in the audiobook, although I'm not opposed to that. In fact, there are great audiobooks. But point being, I have a friend of mine who literally doesn't go anywhere without at least one book, and has, and he will pull it out.
Wait, is it me?
Well, it's probably it's you as well. I'm kidding. It's a college friend, and we live here in town, and it's just so when we're going to the movie, like we sit down at the movie theater, and he pulls out the book, like even during the trailers are going, and he's reading and or prior to and all that, and. It's just funny to me because that, like, that's that kind of like it. In other words, you mentioned Instagram. This is where I'm going with this. You mentioned Instagram, and people pull that out or any other, you know, rabbit hole that they can go down and scroll and scroll and scroll. And even if it's only 5 minutes, that's 5 minutes you could have been reading, you know, like it's almost that phrase. Oh, this could have been a meeting. Oh, I could have been reading. Right.
You know, I really like what you said about the podcast, actually, because there's definitely a kind of reading inertia where when you're not reading a book, you're not reading a book, and you have to decide, and deciding what you want to read can be a big deal, especially if you don't read terribly often. You want that book to be worth your time because you're only going to read 10 this year. So you kind of make it count, and you put all this pressure on yourself, and then it becomes really, you make it a whole thing when it doesn't have to be a thing. But you said you're always listening to a podcast. And once you're listening to a podcast, you're listening to that podcast. And the next time you have a few minutes, or you're driving, or you're walking the dog, or whatever you do, you can just hit play on that podcast. Like you're resuming what you were already in the middle of. And it's just so easy to be in the middle of something, but hard to be at the beginning. So reading often begets reading once you get that ball rolling. And then you finish a book and it was great. And you think, that was great. I want to do that again. And if you can, you know, choose the next one and get rolling, then you're off.
Exactly. And it is seasonal. And so I mentioned last year, about a year ago, I started and finished. I got it. I actually got it for Christmas. I got the Eric Idle from Monty Python, his autobiography, and I pulled it out and I read through the whole thing in a matter of, I only did it in the evenings, and I did it as my son was reading his book and screens were off in the house for, you know, the curfew, the cutoff time, so to speak. And in about five nights, it might have been longer, I don't know. But all I remember is looking forward to when that time was going to happen and I could sit and do that and sip some hot decaf tea in the evening and wind down and laugh out loud to myself while everybody turns and looks, is like, what's so funny? I'm like, you wouldn't get it. Yeah.
Oh, I'm loving that visual.
The momentum of it, though, led me to then pick up another book and another book. And I had a string of about four or five in a row. And then I started to get into a certain book that was really big, and it was another autobiography. And then things just got so busy, and I kind of was like, ugh. And so I fell out of the habit again. But I realized that it's much like every other habit. It's the nurturing and the reinforcing and the removal of boundaries and the setting up of the ritualizing of it, even in the margins or in big blocks of time. You know, that's my take on my reading life, especially with having intention towards it. But you've got experience of diagnosing / consulting people.
Bibliotherapy is real.
Yeah.
And we do a fair amount of reading life rehab.
Yeah. So I would love for you to maybe spell out, like, what are the reasons why we fall off and how are the ways we can get back on?
Oh, gosh. I mean, because we're human. Yours is a common story, Eric. And that's something, I mean, there are some people who just read the printed matter around them. And if they don't have anything else to read, they will read the cereal box. And I know a lot of people are nodding right now. For those who don't relate to that, I assure you, this is a thing and other people besides me do it. So I'm not really, that's not the habit that I'm going to break, which isn't good or bad. It just is. But you're telling your story about how things got busy and you got derailed. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've had like a really great workout routine in progress, or that I walk the dog at a certain time of day, but then I get sick. Or I'd leave town for a week and I'd come back and it's like I have to start over with that habit because it's been disrupted. And it's so, our habits can be so delicate. But I mean, there are certainly things you can do though to nudge yourself in the right direction. Like when I was picturing you sitting down with your big mug of decaf tea and your Eric Idle autobiography, I was picturing the book on the coffee table in front of you. And I don't know if that was actually the situation, but that is a really good idea. There's a reason that we keep books on the coffee table or on the nightstand, because that way when we're sitting in the place where we might do the thing, it's right there to kind of remind us, like, hey, hello, I'm still here. Do you remember me? The good book you were reading? Don't forget about me. You can put that Kindle app or that like Libro FM app on the home screen on your phone so that every time you pick it up, you can see. Actually, I have a screensaver that is pretty old at this point, but it says, I'd rather be reading. And it's a photo of pretty books. And every time I turn on my phone, that's what I see. I tell a lot of people to put their books by the coffee pot or a little post-it that says, don't forget you're on page 87 and you're really enjoying that book. Because just 3 minutes while the coffee's brewing, you can look at that. And often if you read 3 minutes worth, you want to see what happens for another minute or two or 10, which can be kind of dangerous if you've got to get out the door. But that's just the risky run with a good book sometimes. So there are things you can do to help yourself. But I think it really helps people to know that this is not like this massive obstacle to reading itself. This is human nature. And you find a way to do all kinds of things. And this is not insurmountable.
According to the CDC, 74% of the U.S. is overweight. That is a staggering number, and it means that the majority of adults, like myself, need to lose weight to improve our metabolic health. The good news is Prolon can help. Prolon is fasting with food. That's right, it's fasting, but it's with food. And it all starts with Prolon's 5-day program. Snacks, soups, and beverages are all designed to activate your body's fasting state, and it's unlike anything you've ever experienced. With Prolon, you get everything you need, prepackaged, ready to go. Every order of Prolon's 5-day program comes with 5 boxes labeled by day so you know what to eat each day. Prolon is science-backed nutrition that helps support blood sugar levels and cardiovascular health, and change your relationship with food in just 5 days. I've had experience with fasting myself, both intermittent and otherwise, and Prolon makes it so much easier. It's not a diet, it's science. Science based on Nobel Prize-winning discoveries in medicine. Right now, Prolon is offering Beyond the To-Do List listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. Go to prolonlife.com/beyond. That's prolonlife.com/beyond for this special offer. That's prolonlife.com/beyond. When it comes to hiring, don't search for great talent. Match with them, thanks to Indeed. With Indeed, you can ditch that busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, making their matching engine your go-to because it's constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use it, the better it gets. I used to be involved giving my input into the hiring process for a few key roles that were connected to mine. And man, do I wish we had Indeed back then, because we could have gotten much higher quality hires using Indeed. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And in the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility on Indeed.com at Indeed.com/to-do list. Just go to Indeed.com/to-do list right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/to-do list. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. What's something that works so well, it basically feels like magic? For me, I'm thinking air conditioning, noise-canceling headphones, definitely. Meeting-free Fridays? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your own shop stage to the first real store stage, you don't have to just sell your own stuff anymore. With Shopify Collective, you can curate products to sell from brands you love and give your customers more variety and your business more sales. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. Shopify also helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/beyond. Again, go to shopify.com/beyond now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/beyond. You're tapping into some of what we've talked about in past episodes when it comes to habits and reinforcing them and making, you know, physical call outs or reminders, or, you know, I'd call it a trigger, but that word almost, that word trigger almost triggers some people when they hear it.
So. Yeah. I mean, these are definitely strategies that your listeners are so familiar with. And just the little trick is to realize, like, oh, this could work for reading as well. How? But I have confidence. Y'all can do this.
Awesome. Yes.
But I think the most important thing you need is good books to read.
Yeah. Well, and see, that's the other thing that I know you're excelling in. And I mean, again, that's what you do, is you called it bibliotherapy. I don't know if that's really where this goes, although I guess you're diagnosing people, right? You're saying, okay, let me talk to this person and I will help you figure out your reading taste. Well, how do we do that ourselves if we can't talk to you?
Oh, well, come talk to me on what should I read next? That would be fun.
Yeah.
But I mean, pay attention to what you like and what you don't. I mean, the story behind what should I read next. So what happens is every week a guest tells me three books they love, one book they don't, and what they've been reading lately. And I recommend three books that I think they'll enjoy reading next. But the reason we do it like this is I was so frustrated with conversations with people in my local life and then people online who say things like, oh, this is an amazing book I just finished and everyone should read it. And like, that's not true. Like, just because you loved a book doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to, because people have different tastes. Or people saying like, Anne, I'm going on a trip. I need you to tell me about a great book. And I'd say, okay, like, what do you like? And they'd say, no, come on. Just like, tell me a great book. Like, well, I can tell you what I enjoy, but that's not a guarantee that you will enjoy it. And I really got, before we started the show, I really got to thinking about, well, how can we suss out people's reading tastes and like really get quickly to what they do like, you know, like to diagnose their taste and to recommend based on that books they may enjoy reading next. But my advice is to, well, I mean, oh gosh, Eric, it's almost like you invited me on because I have a new book. my advice is that you just keep a very simple log of what you're reading. Title and author will suffice at a minimum. Dates read would be great, just because it helps you remember. Like, out of sight, out of mind is so true. If you were to ask me, like, did you read a really great book in October? I mean, I may or may not be able to remember. But if I look at my journal, it's all there. And this is also true for habit formation. Like, if you want to read more, keep a log, because you get what you measure. And when you're writing down what you're reading, you remember. You're called back to that. You see, you think, oh, I really enjoyed that book and I want to read more of them, which is a good thing if that's what you're going for. When you can see in a list, what did you read? How did you feel about it? You'll begin to notice patterns that just don't occur to you when you're just holding it all in your mind. And really just think about, what was it about that book that worked for me? And the real thing I love doing with people is talking about why a book wasn't right for them. Those books that we finished, but we did not enjoy, or that rubbed us the wrong way, help us discover so much, not only about what we don't like, but about what really works for us in a book, because that truth often emerges in contrast.
Okay, so I have to stop you there, because I have a question that is related to what you just said about finishing a book that we may not like. And I have heard, which this was years ago, and I've heard it reiterated a number of times, and I think it originated with Chris Brogan, if anyone's familiar with him. But he says, life's too short to finish books you don't like or you're not enjoying or something along those lines.
And oh, John Irving said like 40 years ago, yeah, so grownups not finish books they're not enjoying. Yeah,
so, and Chris, what Chris is great at, and I aspire sometimes to say I also do, is take what somebody else said and then shorten it and sweeten it and make it sound like it's your own and new and fresh and whatever. But anyway, my point being is there are times where I have finished, for example, a horrible movie so that I can have a complete thought to tell people this is horrible and here is why. But I don't think that's the best of intentions when it comes to finishing things.
You're hate watching.
Hate watch. Yeah. So, but what's your take on that? Like, if you're just, I don't know, if maybe if you're just bored or if you just don't like it or you disagree with it, or like, in other words, what's your track record with this? Like, have you quit books?
Oh my gosh. Yes. All the time. Okay. I'm a huge advocate for putting down books that are not worth your reading time. Now, I can read a book. Oh, and you can learn all kinds of things about your reading life by not finishing books too. Like, that's fine. You don't have to finish a book to say like, I did not enjoy that book. But you would ask yourself like, why did I put it down? Was it boring? Did I not like the theme? Was the fact that there were no quotation marks just really getting on my nerves and I could not do it for another page? Like, stop and notice. Instead of, we tend to like try to forget about books that didn't work for us, because I think it feels like some kind of failure that we chose and we thought it was going to work out and we hated it. So we try to kind of hide the evidence. You don't want to do that. You really want to examine why you felt compelled to put it down. I have really not enjoyed reading books I didn't like, because that's not how that works. But I have read plenty of books that I really did not like and have still found it to be a worthwhile reading experience that I'm glad that I had. But getting to the end of a book that took 6 hours of your life and going, I just want those 6 hours back. What a waste of time. That was poorly done. And I just wish I had never, like, I never want anyone to have that experience. And we've been talking about forming a habit of reading, and nothing brings someone's reading life to a standstill than being in the middle of a book they don't want to be reading. I mean, talk about a way to kill your reading momentum. Yeah. If it's not worth your reading time, if you are just dreading picking the book up, then maybe you should reevaluate whether you should be reading that book. Cause you are an adult. You're probably not reading it for work. You're not reading it for school. You don't have to sign anything that said you did it. Like, you are the boss of your own reading life, and, you know, be a good steward at that time. Choose well.
Yeah. Well, and so here's where I'll reveal what the book was that derailed me.
Oh, I want to hear.
You know what? I don't have it right in front of me. It's on the other side of the bookshelf that's on the other side of my desk here, and I can't go see it. But it is a Beatles biography, and it is about 3 inches thick almost, which, if you can picture that, that's a thick book. And it's not that it was bad. It's just that as I got in through the first chapter and finished the first or second or so, I realized that it was so detailed, and I thought I was already a huge Beatles fan and had already read so much about them. The Beatles thing kind of sprung off of the Eric Idle thing, who was spending so much time with George Harrison, one of the Beatles, and his friends in real life with him, and so on and so on. So I kind of went down that comedy and music path, and I thought, ooh, the Beatles have this Get Back thing that's coming out later in 2021. Perfect. I'll have this be a Beatles reading and music and blah, blah, blah year. It didn't really turn out that way, because this book kind of derailed me. Point being, I realized that I wasn't enjoying it as much because I was expecting something different from it. I was expecting a little less. It was not just crammed so thick factually with things, but it was also just taking so long to say the things that it was saying in the author's writing style. So I feel like what I'm going to go do soon is pull that back out. I'm going to allow myself to maybe speed read it a little bit so that I can get through it faster and kind of scan and say, ooh, this looks interesting. Let's hone in on this, you know, kind of skip around maybe a little bit, fast forward, I guess. Oh my gosh. I realize right now I'm saying I'm going to do the equivalent of turning up the Netflix show or the podcast to 1.5 speed on my reading or more, because I really think it's a good book. It didn't hit me at the right way at the right time at that time. And it felt like I was working through it versus enjoying it. Does that make sense?
Oh, it totally does. Okay. You did two things really well there. So what many readers do is they're reading a book and they don't like it and they go, I don't know, this is just not working for me, and they put it aside. But you really stopped to articulate why. So one, you said, it's not that it was bad, but it wasn't the book I thought I was getting. It wasn't what I expected. It wasn't what I wanted to read. And that's completely valid and good to notice. But you also said that you didn't really like the style, that it was wordy. You didn't use that word, but that it was long. It was longer than it needed to be.
Yeah, it was. It wasn't that it was wordy. It's that, and we don't really need to get into this, but I feel like I'm already there, so I'm just going to go ahead.
Go for it.
It's that he, and maybe this is this person's style, but it's the way it struck me as his style, whether it is or not, that though he could have stated a fact or said, this is the way that things were, and they did this and they did that, like, he doesn't get flowery with his words, but he just wants to paint the context of the picture so much with the atmosphere that they're walking into this place with, and the smells and the sound, and a certain amount of that is okay. This felt like you are going above and beyond what you need to do in that instance to do that. Kind of much like what I'm doing right now in this conversation. So
I also want readers to know, since we're talking about potentially abandoning books, that there is a big difference between thinking a book is bad, just poorly written, and it not being the right book for you, or it not being the right book for you right now. And understanding those are different things is really empowering to a lot of readers.
Yeah. I think then this is a perfect place to say, like, the book that you've come out with isn't really a book so much as it is a reading journal that helps you to develop your reading life. And it's called that, literally, My Reading Life, a book journal. And I love the way that this is set up as a journal. Like, I don't know if I've ever told you this story, but in between my freshman year of college and my sophomore year of college, that I took a semester off. So I did a full year freshman year, then summer and fall. I took fall off and then went back in January. And during that time that I was off, I worked in a warehouse and was just staying busy and figuring out what I wanted to do, needed a break. And I read like voraciously. No. And I read 109 books in that period of time.
What? No, you have never told me this story.
And the thing is that I really do wish, like, I have some memories of what I, like, at the time, all of the John Grisham books that existed, I went through all of them. And there was less then, but this was mid to late 90s. But yeah, so that's a chunk that I know of. But I wish that I had a journal to keep track of those things at that time.
Oh my gosh. Eric, don't you wish you could see exactly what you were reading during that period of your life?
Right. Yeah. I wish I could. And I don't remember a lot of it. I know I went through Chronicles of Narnia during that time and a bunch of other C.S. Lewis stuff. Yeah, so it's hard for me to say, but I wish that I could remember a lot of the other sporadic ones where it was actually formational for me back then, but I don't remember that seed being planted at that time, unfortunately. But this is a chance for somebody to use this journal to, in a way, not only diagnose their reading taste, but also to help with one of the other things that I think works really well that ties into what I was just saying with that 109 number is once I started reading in May of that year, I had gotten through May and I think I was at like 10 or 15 books suddenly. Mm-hmm. And I realized, oh, this is a game. What's my record? You know? And I don't think I could hit 109 ever again because life is way different now for you know, an adult with kids and jobs, etc. But back then, 109 was doable. So that gamification, that challenging of yourself to read, as well as, like, in other words, that reading goal for me was, man, when I go back to college, I want to be able to say I've read more than 100 books. And I did.
And you did. And that it was felt my good.
Goal. Yeah. But I'm interested, like, what are some other maybe reading goals that people could set?
Actually, here, instead of rattling this off the top of my head, I've got my journal in front of me. And there is I suggested some goals in here. Now, I want to be careful with reading goals, especially I think right now, because I think so many readers, so many people are just really burned out generally from the last years. And what you need is not a goal. Maybe you need a respite. So I want to be really careful about the framing here. But if you want to set goals, if you find yourself to be a person who's really motivated by having something to aim for, by all means, I want to help you do that. So like the journal, it has place to record 100 books in detail, half spread page each. It also has like a very visual do-it-yourself table of contents in the front where there's 1 to 100 blank lines and you fill in the books you've read as you go along. So you can just see at a glance how many you're reading. This would have been great for your freshman to sophomore year interim 109 books project. But okay, so the reading goals I suggest in the journal are you could aim to read more books. This one is obvious. You could read more pages. You could aim to read more consistently. There's a reading tracker in this journal. It's a 2-page spread, so you can see your entire reading year at a glance. And you can bubble in a little diamond for every day you read. And you can see what kind of pattern it makes as time goes by. You can read a wider variety of genres. You could become a completist. Like right now, I'm working through all the works of Maggie O'Farrell. And I know I want to read all the works of T.R.E. Jones. I just have one more to go. And Doris Kearns Goodwin. You can have that satisfaction of reading an author's entire collection. You can broaden your perspective by reading in a variety of different ways that I suggest in here. You could try a reading challenge. You can broaden your worldview. We know so many readers now who are doing really unique challenges, like reading a book from every country or reading a book from every country on a specific continent or every of a list of like the 30 most popular, most widely spoken languages in the world. There are so many ways you could do this that are totally customized to you.
Very cool. Yeah, some of those are ones, those are new to me, although they then seem so very, very obvious. So,
yeah. Well, sometimes you need it suggested to you. So yeah. Like the journal is filled with prompts and ideas and book lists and things you could try and suggestions and questions to diagnose your own reading taste. I mean, of course, it might not be that hard, but we need somebody sometimes to be like, look, think about it like this, or have you considered X? We need that.
Yeah, totally. And in fact, I kind of pride myself, I hope, on being something like that with this show for people just in life in general. Like, yeah, a lot of this productivity stuff, like it's just a reminder to capture things or calendar things or set reminders for yourself or set up this routine or that ritual or whatever. But like, and it's common sense, but sometimes I want it to be like extra insightful or something, you know, and can get disappointed when it doesn't get that way, but it doesn't have to be. Sometimes you just need to remind somebody of something they already know and need to return to, or something that they used to do and they need to pick that habit back up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, or sometimes we've heard the same advice 14 different ways, but something about the way it's conveyed, the 15th, or the specific story, or hearing how one specific person implemented the strategy in a very specific way that was just, you know, it's not that different from what we'd heard before, but somehow that's when it clicks. Mm-hmm. That matters. That's really important.
It does. It does. And in fact, that's another reason why journaling, when it comes to your reading life, can be helpful, because you might remind your own self about something having read it and journaled it.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true.
I'm curious, what are some maybe other ways to use the journal? Obviously, you have room for 100 books. What else? Describe it a little bit more.
Sure. I mean, if anybody really wants to nerd out on book journaling in general, and this journal specifically, I did a dedicated What Should I Read Next episode not long ago. It's called Read Yourself Like a Book. And it's called that because I think a lot of times we are living our own lives. We're living our reading life as well. And we just don't have the perspective because we're in it to like really assess what's going on, what's working, what's not. How are we helping ourselves? How are we hurting ourselves? But when you put it on paper, you gain a measure of objectivity you don't have otherwise. And so this is a print journal. It does not exist in any kind of digital edition. And we really leaned into the fact that this is a book that you're going to hold in your hands when we were designing it. Like it lays flat and it has that visual do-it-yourself table of contents where you can really see 71 books that you have read and however long it takes you to read those at a glance. Just so easy to take in. If you're wondering the next 29 books, they're on the next page because you need 3 pages to cover that. But there are prompts to help you like take a snapshot of your reading life right now. At the very beginning, there's questions that say, okay, where are you? What's going on here? What's working? What's not working? There's a series of questions to help you diagnose your reading taste. There are 25 different book lists that have 20 different books each that are a variety of, some of them are just genres like historical fiction, thrillers, There's a list of 20 first installments in mystery series, if that's what you're looking for. There's love stories. There's books set in bookstores and libraries. There's my favorite genre, compulsively readable literary fiction. That is not a real thing. It's something I invented, but it is my favorite. Or there are things like books set by the water or books for plant lovers. And then there's the core of the journal is those 100 book logs that let you track the obvious stuff like title, author, genre, length, but also things like how you discovered the book. So you know which friend to thank or which podcast you get great book recommendations from. You can write down quotes and your thoughts and impressions. And there's a three-tier rating system, actually. Like I was saying earlier that there's a difference between a book that's poorly written and a book that's just not to your taste because you don't like that kind of thing. So there's three different ways to rate the book. You can give it a 5. It's not actually stars, it's diamonds. But you can rate it for enjoyment, for craft, and then overall. That's so you can remember, like, yeah, that book seemed like it was incredibly well done and I hated it. And those things can totally exist at the same time. But there's a couple other things in those journal tracking pages. But there's also a lot of logs in the back where you can track things like your favorite books of the year, your best fiction and nonfiction picks. And I said the year because that's how some readers are using it, but you can begin this. I started mine on August 25th, and that is just fine. There's places to log out, literary destinations you want to go to or bookstores you want to visit or who you've borrowed books from and who you've loaned books to. There's places to track all kinds of things for your reading life. But I hope that it will really help readers benefit by, you know, adding richness and helping them remember what they've read so you get a longer term benefit from what you've read, but also hold your hand and help you discover new great stuff as well.
That's awesome. And it sounds like there's just so much packed in to it. Like it seems like, and here's the thing, we're kind of, this episode's coming out at a time where we're getting into the American Thanksgiving, as well as that then folds into the holidays season, even on through to like New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, and people setting resolutions, which you can set at any time of year. You don't have to do it just at the turning of the page of a calendar, but it sounds like it's the perfect opportunity to jump back in to establishing a reading habit and that this is a great tool for that.
I think it is. And I think it's so true that so many people read more in that week between Christmas and New Year. Even if you don't celebrate the holiday, so many people are off work and, you know, you can sit in front of the fire and read a good book. And it's a nice time to establish that routine or to remember why you have enjoyed reading in the past, if it's something that's kind of fallen away for you.
Yeah. Well, I will make sure to link up to not only that, but the episode you mentioned from What You Should Be Reading or What Should I Read, sorry, that expounds on it a little bit more. And then basically everywhere else people can find all your stuff. So including, I think, the past episodes that you've been on for the show. So and actually, I will include the episode that I was on years ago because I still think it was really enjoyable to listen to and tapped into some stuff. So it might be cool to do another version of that where it's like, okay, it's been years. Let's figure out what Eric should read now. You know,
I think that would be really fun.
But I'll link up to all that in the show notes for this episode. And it's always awesome to talk with you and always open door. Well, let me know when you want to come back.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. Thank you for having me. It's good to talk again.
Well, that's another podcast crossed off your listening to-do list. I hope that you enjoyed this conversation with Anne Bogle. I enjoy talking with her every single time she's on the show. She will definitely be back again. Make sure to check out her reading journal. You can find the link to that in the show notes for this episode, which you can find in your podcast player app of choice or the show notes over at beyondthetodolist.com. If you found this episode enjoyable and helpful, I would love for you to do me the favor of hitting that share button and sharing it with somebody that you know needs to hear this conversation. Again, just hit the share button wherever you're listening to this. Send it to that person and do them and me that favor. Thank you again for sharing. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next episode.